Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me is my good friend and co-host and only third black man in the overall Star Wars universe. No, fourth. I'm sorry, fourth black man in the overall Star Wars universe. No, fifth, because we saw one in this movie. The fifth black man in all Star Wars universe, Mr. Spencer Williams.
You know, that is not...
It's true.
None of that is good. It's all bad.
For a universe that's so vast and diverse, and there has to be only five black people. Yep. Just saying, there's a whole tribe of fish people and all these other things, but only five black people in the entire universe. And speaking of minorities, also with us here in the flesh is intern manager, managing intern, Amy.
Hi.
Because you're the only intern here, so you're the minority.
Yeah, that's what I'm managing intern, but thank you.
You're managing at being an intern.
I represent the department.
You represent the Lollipop Guild. And speaking of which,
the Lollipop Guild?
We have a great show in store as we are going to be diving deep into the most recently released film out of the Star Wars industry, and that is The Mandalorian and Grogu. I saw one snippet of it that had said it was called Star Wars, The Mandalorian and Grogu, and I'm like, that doesn't sound right. Hmm. So I think it's just The Mandalorian and Grogu. So stick around as we dive into that, get to the nitty gritty, and let you know our thoughts of the recently dropped Star Wars film. But before we do, Spencer, why don't you give us some opening credits?
Tune into brand new episodes each and every week.
We're trying.
That's my line.
On all your favorite streaming platforms and on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at filmosophy101. Also, we're on Blue Sky at Filmlosophers Podcast.
Yes, we have a website over at Film Lobsters Podcast. There we got a filmlobsterspodcast.com. There we got a legend over 300 movies. Everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, thrills and chills, space epics and space sagas. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmlobsterspodcast.com. You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming. And that's iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart and Amazon Music. You can tune into your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there. And give us a 5-star review. And if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
We have.
Yes, please.
We'll give you the social links at the end of the episode. We are excited because we're going to be diving into the recent Star Wars film. And it's essentially a Star Wars story, much like the Rogue One or the Solo one or things like that. But before we do, I kind of wanted to get your guys' thoughts.
Oh, no.
The nature of a lot of these shows that come out, especially on Disney Plus. I think Disney Plus is notorious for doing this. And this will probably trickle into our main conversation, but do you think that it's kind of unfair for movie audiences when they go and see something, especially if it's derived from a product that's currently a series on Disney Plus, to have like the same production value? Like if a show has...
Oh, I was going to bring this up during the episode.
Yeah, I was thinking about it and I'm like, you know, we're going to talk about this movie, but I almost feel like also we're talking about the show at the same time.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, I don't know if it's like, look, it's the juxtaposition where people want a great show and they want a great experience when they're waiting a whole week for their next show, you know, of whatever they're watching, whatever they're binging. And it comes out and it's like, amazing, and it's like, you know, cinema epic type, you know, CGI and artistry and everything that's involved in it. But then you're gonna also put out movies and you expect people to go to the theater to pay to see these movies when the movies in the trailers kind of look like the shows that they watch at home.
Yeah, that was actually something I was midway through the movie and I'm like, yeah, this is a really odd spot to be in.
Yeah,
because you end up at the point of like, well, why didn't you just put this on Disney Plus? Because
yeah, 100%.
It looks the same. Like usually, like in the past, we'll say, like, if there was a TV show and they did a movie, let's take Power Rangers.
That, yeah, yeah, it's a
like,
great one.
Like, there's a step up in, like, quality, in air quotes, but because, like, some of those Megazord scenes at the end were kind of rough for the time.
That was very, like, experimental CGI, whatever was.
But, like, you could tell, hey, there's an obvious quality difference.
Yeah.
Like, you're kind of paying for something new. That's not here. Now,
and it's funny that you mentioned that, because even in the series, talking about Power Rangers, even in the series, they did try to address the events, or at least readdress the events in the movie, in the series, and it was definitively nowhere near the quality of the movie.
Because they had to, like, oh, we're going to tell, like, almost the same story again, but, like, really shrunken down and slightly different in some ways.
Yeah. And it's like, this has already happened. I already saw the better version of this.
Yeah.
It's like going to see, you know, Othello at on Broadway and then going and seeing some junior high production of it. It's like, yeah, I'll stick with the one I just saw. Like, no offense to this one. Great effort. A for effort, but I'll stick with the actual other one. And it's like that with, like, some of these other series, with some of the other, like, movies and stuff like that that are derived from either a series or some type of limited event that's going on. Like on regular TV or whatnot, you know, Fox is notorious for that. You know, there's always a series. Like, I don't know, Amy, do you know of a series where you saw the series and they created a movie event based off of that, and it was vastly different as far as quality was?
Oh, I mean, they upped the quality, and it wasn't a drastic leap for the Bob's Burger movie.
Oh yeah,
but
yeah.
It was also like, you could see where there was some tighter animation, and you could see some different sequencing that they started instituting into the show after the movie was done. But yeah, I mean, it's even if you looked at Serenity in relation to Firefly, like, that kind of looked about the same. It was a little bit.
Oh no, there was a difference in that one. I mean,
also, the show was canceled, so.
And I think why it kind of gets a pass, because, like, hey, this is the wrap-up.
This is it.
Yeah.
We are done.
But speaking of animated series that got movies, like, The Simpsons movie, that's one of those ones that I think distinctly got a glow up when they did their movie version versus their regular series one.
And
so it's like you're seeing a movie version of a show that you've watched on TV. And I think the amount of work that's going into these series, although the demand for, like, high quality is there, it is also like a double-edged sword, and it's shooting them in the foot as well.
Yeah.
Because, and we'll get into more about this as we talk about the review, but I think if you're going to pay for your series to look great, then you're also diminishing the point of people needing to go to the movies to see a movie point in the series. Like, I don't feel like they're doing themselves justice. Now, mind you, there are people who are going to be always willing to pay for that. Yeah, and if that's what they're banking on, then you know what the main primary driver is. Money. Yeah. You know, it's not so much like investment in the story. It's not investment in the fandom. It's like you look at, take Serenity, for instance, in the Firefly fandom, there was still a story to be told. The series ended, the series was canceled. Mm-hmm. And I think it was, what, 2 years later, 2-3 years later that the movie came out.
The movie came out, yeah.
And honestly, it was more so for the fans and to give conclusion to the story more so than money. Because I don't recall it being in theaters that long.
I don't remember.
Yeah, it wasn't in theaters that long.
Now, in juxtaposition, I give you every anime movie that's come out of a series. I'm looking at you like Jujutsu Kaisen, Demon Slayer, Inuyasha didn't get away from it, My Hero, like Naruto. Everybody's got a movie that happens to be smack dab somewhere in the middle of their continued timeline. And
Dragon Ball.
Dragon Ball.
I'm looking at you, Spencer.
And I think this is something really we can delve into when we start talking about the movie proper and my particular feelings in relation to this and what they decided to do for Mandalorian and Grogu. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and it's such a shift from like the olden days, like, and I say the olden days, but like just 20 years ago, whatnot, with TV.
Don't make us sound
the
ancient.
Olden days.
That, okay, when we were younger. Okay. Is that better?
That's a festival. Fine. Let's go.
The Festivus for the rest of us. You know, the series that were out that like had a unique feel to it that was just primarily the show feel. And then you got the sudden shift. There was a reason to rush to the theaters to see, like, I think 24. 24 was one of those series on Fox that had, I believe they had a movie that culminated. I don't know if you want to look it up.
I don't.
Researcher over there. But the fact is, don't look at me because your mic isn't set up properly. You're knocking it over and it's hitting yourself.
And then you were mad that you didn't have your own information.
I'm trying to carry this conversation here because, you know.
But you brought up something and.
But like, what I'm saying is, like, there was a culmination in certain events where the anticipation.
Yeah, there was a 2008 movie called 24 Redemption.
Okay, see.
Was it in theaters?
Yeah.
This is the only thing I did not see.
I would assume so. Like, unless it was like straight to TV movie.
It might be. It says broadcast.
Oh, okay. Well, TV event, one
it
of those.
It did not receive a wide theatrical release, though it had high but it had a international release. Viewings in Germany and Argentina.
Ah, Argentinians needed to know their 24 horas.
Apparently.
I feel like that shift is gone. And it's no longer like there's no longer the distinction between what's streaming on TV or what's on TV per se, and then what gets counted as cinema. Because if you look at some of these shows nowadays, like some of these shows have a production quality that's so high up there that they could easily be movies.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, very true.
And so I think this is going to be one of those. This is going to be one of the sticking points that I think we might touch upon. Well, we're definitely going to touch upon when we go into this review. As we transition over to our conversation of The Mandalorian and Grogu. Now, again, this has been a much anticipated movie by a lot of people, mostly to see what the distinction is going to be from the actual series versus the movie and, you know, what's going to happen to everybody's favorite lovable Baby Yoda. So before we get into any more of this information, Spencer, why don't you give us that official synopsis goodness?
The evil empire has fallen and imperial warlords remain scattered throughout the galaxy. As the fledgling New Republic works to protect everything the rebellion fought for, they have enlisted the help of the legendary Mandalorian bounty hunter and his young apprentice Grogu.
Yes, directed by Jon Favreau, who co-wrote the film with Dave Filoni and Noah Clore. The film stars Pedro Pascal as Din Djarin, the Mandalorian, who also was portrayed on set by Brendan Wayne and Latiel Crowder, alongside Jeremy Allen White, Johnny Coyne, Martin Scorsese, Steve Bloom, and Sigourney Weaver. A couple key pieces of information about the movie. This is the first theatrically released movie to directly tie in with the Disney Plus Star Wars shows, which is interesting because the Clone Wars show actually, I believe, debuted after Revenge of the Sith. So I think that wouldn't count for that. And then obviously if you're looking at like the Solo movie had nothing to do with any of those. There's no tie-in from the prequel or the sequel series. And there is a slight tie-in, but it's not like based off of from Rogue One. There's actually General Syndulla from the Rebels TV series is mentioned, and you see Chopper. The droid gets in the Rebels series. So that's actually really cool, the fact that this is the first, hopefully, of many. Another key piece of information, by her own admission, Sigourney Weaver joined the cast of this film because she really wanted to act on screen with Grogu himself. That is interesting, especially since the fact that I believe he is only a puppet a small percentage of the time. I know they make efforts to try to use him in a physical way with like a, you know, with a puppet or whatnot in a practical way. But I believe most of the time he is CG, maybe. I don't know. But, you know, if that came true, like more power to her, because that's actually really cool. Another key piece of information that Amy was just going nuts over and she would not stop talking about.
It was cool.
The large robots the Mandalorian fights were stop motion animation created by Phil Tippett, who also created the stop motion effects for the original Star Wars trilogy. Yeah. So that was actually really interesting. Amy would not stop mentioning that. She would be like, did you know this? This is what happened. Did you know this is what happened? And I said, Amy, enough. It's content. And she just, and then she did the pouty face, and just like she's doing now, mind you, and she just didn't want to continue on the conversation.
I'm celebrating art where art is, and considering that they took the original trilogy, and Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau were like, we put it in here, and Phil Tippett's coming in, and I'm like, ah!
So why is Phil Tippett so important to the overall industry?
So Phil Tippett, as you stated, was did stop motion animation for the original Star Wars trilogy. He did the fight in the board game fight in the Millennium Falcon in New Hope. He also did, it's the AT-ATs and not the AT-ATs, the walkers.
Yeah, it's all based on personal preference, to be honest. I would say it's based off personal preference. AT-ATs, AT-ATs. I mean, we all say it differently. I would say, uniquely enough, it is very cool that we do have a friend of ours who goes by the name of Matthias, who does emceeing and curation over at the Orinda Theater in the Bay Area. And he actually had Phil Tippett come through for Star Wars Day and talk about the work he did on the film. So that's actually really cool.
But beyond Star Wars, he is also responsible for bringing Ed 209 from RoboCop to life, as well as the bugs and Starship Troopers. And then didn't he do some stop motion for the dinosaurs?
You are looking at your notes right there. Just tell me.
Jurassic Park. He did some stop motion work for the dinosaurs.
He did the original storyboarding for the raptors and some of the dinosaurs in those scenes. With stop motion, however, it was just used for storyboard. They ended up going with CG after the fact, but he does have a hand in helping build kind of what the momentum and the trajectory was for those scenes. Anything else over there?
He founded his own visual effects powerhouse studio in 1984, and he has won 2 Academy Awards, one for Return of the Jedi and the other for Jurassic Park, 2 Emmys and a BAFTA.
Hmm.
There. Ta-da!
All right. And last piece of information, the creatures in the gladiatorial scene are all full-size versions of those from the, Dajarik chess game seen aboard the Millennium Falcon in A New Hope. This is what Amy was mentioning earlier. The floor of the arena also has the same round shape and checkered pattern as the Dajarik chessboard in the ship, which we do end up seeing again in The Force Awakens when Rey ends up going onto the ship and pushes a button and the things start playing by itself. So it was a really great callback to the original trilogy, even though it's not quite connected per se. It's still a really fun callback. So we're going to be talking about this movie. And of course, before we go any further, I do want to just express a little bit of concern that we will be talking about slight spoilers. Obviously, to get into this movie, there are going to be a couple of plot points that we will have to divulge. So you've been warned. Spoiler alert.
So loud.
Was that too loud in your ears, Ames?
Yep.
You sure? Do you want me to turn it up? Was that? I can turn it all the way up.
I turned you down. 11, but thank you.
So let's. Spencer's like, what is happening?
He's in charge of the board, Spencer.
I'll be so willing to pass it off to whomever else, to be honest. So you guys have at it. Didn't think so. So I want to first kind of initiate this conversation with kind of a touch base on how far or if we've completed the actual series so far. Now, I know, Spencer, you're probably a little. Oh, wait, you said you finished it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, do I remember it? No.
Yeah, I think that's the the kicker. Yeah,
like, you know, big plot points.
Spencer
Moff Gideon.
Spencer is very accomplished and
Starbuck.
Low on memory. He's
Starbuck.
He's like a Timu so gaming PC. He works really
How
hard, just low on memory.
That's so mean. I feel like I can at least be from Best Buy or something.
At least Best Buy. Come on.
Maybe.
Wait, you're gonna Circuit City this?
We're gonna
place that's
no almost. Okay. A Walmart. I'll go Walmart gaming.
That's
PC.
Oh.
You got bright lights, a lot of effort, low memory. Just saying.
That's rude.
It is. It really is.
Amy, you've seen.
Yes.
Okay. And mind you, that also, because I know we were talking about it on air or off air. Sorry. We were talking about how many seasons there are.
Yeah.
And there's currently three.
Yeah.
Correct.
But it feels like there's four because the Boba Fett one includes like the second half of it includes the Mandalorian story in it. And to be quite frank, it kind of just interjects itself and takes over. So it is essentially the Mandalorian with Boba Fett.
Yeah.
That
was a really odd choice.
It really is. Because I don't really think it was a strong enough vehicle for Boba Fett to have on his own. And maybe just my personal opinion, but like Boba Fett is a good character to follow, but as part of an already established saga, you know, either way, however you view it.
I mean, honestly, if they would have just reversed it and made that season three and then, you know, Boba was like a background character that we occasionally followed, I think it would have probably worked.
Yeah. I mean, you can still have multiple characters in a universe and give them a bit of focus and it still be named aptly. So, so technically three seasons. So you've seen the Book of Boba Fett season as well.
Yeah,
and I've seen it as well, Spencer. I don't know if you've seen it. Okay, cool.
Because it also, for Book of Boba Fett, ended up, we had the introduction of Ahsoka in Mando, but then she also ended up tying in a little bit with Grogu and Mando in the Book of Boba Fett, and then she went off into her own series.
Yeah, and that also kind of incorporated the return to Luke Skywalker being a part of this series and the reason why Grogu is no longer with Luke Skywalker in season three.
Yep.
So it's interesting, you know, mind you, it is what it is. So let's talk about expectations coming into this film. Now, Amy and I mentioned this or talked about this before we went on air. I don't recall a lot of promotion for this. I do know there was a ton of stuff at Burger King for it.
What?
There was.
There's a Mandalorian meal.
Ah. There's like a whole meal. There's a whole drink.
In black and white. There's a blue Grogu milkshake. Yep, there's some garlic something chicken fries. There's like some tots. Comes in a box.
Yeah.
There's a thing.
I know there was more food promotion for this movie to me than there was actual film promotion.
Oh. Interesting.
So I'm anxious to know your guys' thoughts. I'll start with you, Spence. Like what were some of your expectations going into this?
Man, that's a really great question because I just saw like the trailers that would play before the movies.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. this one's hard to put because since it's something already established, like I'm very familiar with all these characters. And I guess I kind of didn't really know what we were doing here. Mm-hmm. Like, why is this in theaters? Yeah. Why is this not on Disney Plus? You know, what's going on?
No, I agree 100% because I don't think we left in a place in the series that would lead me to believe, oh, this definitely has to lead to a movie. Like, there was no point in it where I was like, I am not fulfilled. I need something epic to cap this off. And I think part of that for me in terms of like expectations was like the last season ended like 2 years ago or a year ago. Like when was the last season?
23.
Woo! So 3 years ago, almost 3 years ago. I think I was satisfied 3 years ago. Like I think I was good. And I don't recall if I really felt the need for more after that.
I mean, it seemed like it was setting itself up for like, this is where we're leaving it.
Yeah. Like, okay, we're going to stop here and just pick it up when we start the next season. Like, however, there was nothing that really led me to feel like, okay, this is going to require something, you know, grand to sum it all up. So my true expectations were like, I don't know where this is going. But this better not just be an extended episode. Like, I am not going to pay money to see an episode that I already paid Disney for in terms of subscription to watch at home. Mm. So that was my biggest expectation. Amy.
My expectation, I was on the same boat. I'm like, why is it? My thing is, if you're going out,
Amy
with
was
a movie,
all about those garlic chicken fries. So
I didn't even try any of that. That's the other thing. Like, I didn't try any of it. The only reason I know is because DoorDash is like, "Hey, this meal," and I'm like, "What the heck is that? What are you doing?
What a
Burger
weird
King?
World we live in, where you have DoorDash promoting Burger King's promotion of this movie,
of a Disney movie tie.
Everybody's controlled by
Disney
everybody.
Plus show.
I don't like this.
Yeah, it was. Usually when you do a movie, especially if it's of a show, I have an expectation. My expectation is something so massive is going to happen that it is going to shift the focus of whatever comes after it. And it is changing the landscape.
Yeah.
And so everywhere they're like, "Oh, it's Mando and Grogu." And I'm like, okay. And so is this going to be
like, which is different than the rest of the season's house?
So I was like, so are they going to stream it simultaneously? See, like, and this is where I'm going to divert just a little bit because it's part of my expectations. I was like, oh, they're doing a limited release. Like Amazing Digital Circus is like, we're doing a limited release of the episode. I'm like, or Stranger Things did it, or everybody else is like, oh, we have a super limited release. I thought the week of May the 4th, they were going to be like, hey, on the low, we're doing Mando and Grogu, experience it in Screen X, IMAX, whatever, at your sweet, sweet, you know, film. Yeah.
Like
film
almost
temple.
Like almost like the how the Jodie Whittaker season 2. Was it season 2?
Her second season where they did the first two
episodes. Yeah. Like that, cool. Which was cool. Like that was like a really fun event. And you knew that you were going to be able to revisit those as the episodes dropped and so forth. Like I agree, Ames. I was in the same boat.
Yeah. And then to find out that they did a limited release for AMC on May the 4th for maybe 6 or 7 theaters across the entire U.S., and then they pushed a release out after. Oh, by the way, and they're not streaming it, which everybody who's already like, I'm already paying Disney for access to this. So why aren't you dropping it simultaneously? Because they had no problem doing that to everybody else. I know that they did to Pixar. So really, when it came down to it, my expectations were like, oh, OK, this feels like a cash grab or somebody's dead. And and the thing is, the Star Wars universe and the fandom actually kept their lips real zipped because once I stopped paying attention, I didn't see nothing, which was insane that I didn't see anything.
Well, and I think actually you bring up another great point in that. So within the last couple of weeks, we started getting like the press screeners and we started getting like people going to the theaters to review it and so forth. And some of the people that I know in the industry out of LA and whatnot, they had screened it. Or actually, I'm sorry, there were also opportunities where they actually opened up Skywalker Ranch for a select few, which I had some friends who went to that as well. And
which is tradition that doesn't really break because that's for Lucasfilms. They've done that consistently with like the opening or not the opening. The premiere of particular episodes for seasons. So like Ahsoka, they did it for Ahsoka. They did it for Mando. So that is part tradition. So I would expect that from Lucasfilms to keep that going for a small collection.
But what I'm saying is like the fact is that people went to go see it and they were responding to their reaction to it. They were giving their reaction to the movie. And some of the people that I had known who are very like either hardcore Star Wars fans or have been fans of Star Wars as of late with it, like with the new resurgence of like people watching the series on TV or on streaming, watching the Clone Wars, watching Rebels and like kind of rewatching the whole saga as a whole. There was quite a bit of, you know, mixed reactions. And I think the moment I started seeing more than two people, you know, kind of saying the same reaction that wasn't very positive, I had to make every effort to not see anything else regarding it. Like I just tried to skip over it as much as possible. And it was weird because it's like, okay, this is like a very lovable franchise. This is very, you know, a very popular franchise.
Grogu is a very popular character.
Yeah, so I'm like, I don't know how or what kind of thing happened that created like this kind of response, but I needed to steer away from it. So I didn't really have to do any work to steer away from like the promotion or any of the trailers because I didn't see any. Like I saw maybe the one main one very sparsely. It was the reactions that I had to be worried about. So, but I'm sorry, Amy, was there anything else that you wanted to add?
No. So my expectation going in was, well, we're here. Well, we're here. And I'm like, it'd be better than Solo.
I mean, I felt
there
like
were parts of Solo I really liked and it was really difficult, but I was just like, be better than Solo. If I'm paying for add-ins now, be better than Solo.
I kind of thought they were just going to jump that bar. Like it was so ELO that it was pretty easy.
You never know. I mean, it is Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni. Okay, so I got to give them way more credit than that. I'm sorry, guys. I retract. I knew you were going to be better than Solo.
Yeah, you don't want to sully those names. So after we all got a chance to see the movie, immediately after the theaters, after the movie ends, credits roll. What were you guys' first impressions right outside the gate? Let's start with Spencer, because Spencer looks like he's got a fun one.
Okay, so this is honestly what I thought.
Yeah, honestly.
I'm not basing it off of anything we've said today. I was like, man, this really feels like they started an episode of The Mandalorian and then forgot it had to be movie length. And then they were like, okay, and then we need to add in a whole second episode and a half to finish this up. Because it just felt kind of weird as a movie.
Yeah.
Like, that's how I felt right after this.
Amy.
This really was a couple of episodes squishy together. And they're like, do you know what? You're sitting here. You did a good job. We're going to make it shiny. And I'm like, okay. And it was fun. Like, it was fun. But again, it was two and a half ish episodes squished together. Not in a terrible way, mind you. There were points I was like, that's a cliffhanger for an episode.
Yeah. My first impression was like, no offense, but I didn't need to waste my money for this. Like,
good thing you didn't, because we already pay Cinemark.
Honestly, it felt like an episode. It felt like kind of to what Spencer said, there was an episode set out and they're like, oh shoot, we have to make this 2 hours long. So they added in extra time in certain scenes that didn't need to be there, that extended it a little longer. And then it made like the in-between sequences a little longer that created more time.
I know exactly what scene you're talking about, too. Okay.
Because there's like, three or four of them, yeah.
Why did you just have an instant mind flip right there?
Like, yeah. Like there's a few in there that you're just like, I think at one point in time, I turned to Amy and I said, he's already said that like three times. Yeah, he said the same thing three times. And I'm like, why?
I was like, what? Because I had just kind of turned. And I was like,
yeah. And I think the biggest indicator for me that this was definitely more in the vein of a series episode as opposed to a movie was we left the theater and I was standing outside because I was waiting for Amy to go bathroom because Amy had to go bathroom. And so
I waited until the end. I have a good, and you know,
we both waited. I went to the bathroom and then you went. But while I was waiting for Amy, there was like a slew of like folks who just they seemed like older folks and they were coming out. And they were like, yeah, I got to go see it again because I fell asleep. Yeah, me too. I fell asleep.
That's what I walked out. No. Someone was saying I had to see it again. I thought they were talking about a different movie.
No, they were talking about this movie.
Oh, no.
And he's like, yeah, I fell asleep. But it was good. It was like, and I'm like, what Kool-Aid are you drinking, bud?
If you,
like, you didn't
night,
see
night.
It. Like, exactly. If you went to sleep, you didn't see the movie. If you did, if you need to see it again, how are you going to sit there and tell me it was good? Unless he's just a fan of the series and he's just stating that it's by proxy a good show or good film, whatever. Yeah, I feel like as fun as Amy put, as fun as this movie may have been perceived at times, it didn't need to be in theaters. Like I really do feel that way. And I'll talk more about it in a second. And I feel very strongly about it. But the fact is that this is just, this movie is a really big
It's cash grab.
It's a really big piece to the argument as to why this type of content doesn't need to be in theaters. But let's talk about the cast. So talking about the cast, obviously, we're looking at the man himself, Pedro Pascal, as Din Djarin. Pedro Pascal is always fun to watch when you know it's him. Like, honestly, I'm pretty sure he was only probably on set for maybe like a day, maybe 2 days, just but for the scenes where really he had to take tell. His, huh?
You could really tell when they did the shift from, so there's the suit, the suit portray, which is the cowboy walk, which is Brendan Wayne, which is John Wayne's grandson, which is really cool. And he's the one that does a lot of the walking that gives that cowboy energy. And then you had Latif Crowder, who was the stunts.
Yeah.
And but then you could tell in some of those points. And I was like, oh, Pedro, I love you, but we could tell it's you.
Yeah, yeah. Because there was one point where like it switched to Pedro being in there. And I'm like, oh, your whole demeanor just changed, which is crazy that like they're two guys in like. You can't even see their faces. Yeah. And you can like already vibe them out. As
it's funny because yeah. it reminded me of that scene from Shrek the Musical when they're leaving the dragon's castle and the walls come in between as Shrek and Fiona are running and Shrek is now all of a sudden turned around and he's doing backflips and all this. I'm like, wait a second, that's not the main guy. And then it comes back and then it's back to the regular guy. I'm like, there's an obvious shift there. You're
shout
not
out to
Tom
Shrek the Musical.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was a little obvious and on the nose, but again,
well, we love Pedro.
Pedro's great and I love the work that he does. I don't know if there's really a lot more out of this franchise that he can really still attribute himself to. Mostly because a lot of it is just voice acting at this point.
Yeah.
Like he's voice acting a live action. This is like Darth Vader all over again.
Which again, not a bad voice. We do like you, my friend. Yeah.
No, 100%. But I do think the limitations of how much he's putting into the role also needs to be recognized because, again, to the people you mentioned, mm-hmm. like there should be that, which is why I incorporated them in the cast of credits, the cast of characters and performers. They need to be acknowledged just as much as Pedro Pascal.
Yeah,
without 100%. A doubt. So
I think that was one of the cool things that. Brendan Wayne, so John Wayne's grandson, he talked about how with Mandalorian, when he was hired, he's like, I don't have the same presence as my grandfather. And he's like, I'm a different height, I'm a different weight. And Jon Favreau actively worked with him to give him that cowboy energy. And somebody, he was walking on set one day in full armor and he's like, there's the Duke. And he's like, I was really touched because that's something that I always hoped to live up to. Mm. And I am now fully able to say that. And he did. He brought that full like cowboy mm-hmm. energy. And I'm like, that's really cool.
Yeah. And that's actually really, really astounding to know. I didn't know that. Another unique performer in the film as well. The voice acting opportunities for Jeremy Allen White. If you don't know who that is, that he is one of the, he's the main character in the series, The Bear.
He's Carmy.
Yes. He's also from the Iron, what was it? The Iron Hand? No, the one about the four wrestling brothers.
Iron Fist?
No, the brothers, the wrestling family from A24.
Yeah, I thought it was, I thought it was the Iron Fist.
The Iron Claw, I think
it
is.
The Iron Claw. There you go.
Iron Claw or something. He plays one of the brothers in that one. He's done a few things, but totally, non-recognizable in this role as far as his voice. I honestly thought like, okay, they got someone else to do the voice of Rada. Because it didn't sound anything like Jeremy Allen White. If you've ever heard his voice in any live action show, it's a little higher. It's much higher pitched and it's a little bit more kind of fast paced.
He was also in the Springsteen movie.
Oh, yeah. He played Bruce Springsteen, the one that didn't do too well. I got to give the man kudos. He did a really great job playing a hut.
A very nice, very, very beefy, beefy hut.
Yeah. That
beefy hut.
Yeah, you know,
yeah,
stacks on stacks of meat. I don't know what do you want from me.
Keep going.
He was so muzzled. It was so like unexpected, right?
It was disturbing, to be perfectly honest. Mostly because I'm not used to that shape in the hut form.
Gotcha.
It was like a buffed snake.
Yeah.
It looked very much like if a snake had a six pack and could hurt you.
He did have a six pack.
That's what I'm saying. This looked interesting, but mind you, so in the Legends lore, in the expanded universe, there is technically a hut in the original saga timeline that is known for being like extremely muscular. He ends up fighting somebody. I believe he ends up fighting Leia, or he's fighting somebody in the expanded universe, but it's recognized that he is like incredibly buff. He's super muscular. He looks like a gladiator himself. So I don't know if, because Dave Filoni is such a man of appreciation for the Legends lore. I mean, for God's sakes, he brought in like, you know, who am I thinking of names? Admiral Thrawn. He brought in a bunch of other, like,
Thrawn's great.
There is so much that he brought in already to the fray and made it canon that it feels like something he would have like paid homage to. So I don't remember the name. I remember reading the book long time ago. And honestly enough, I remember buying that book at a Goodwill. It was one of those ones that's like, oh, this isn't really Star Wars, but it's got a Star Wars story. And it was weird. But nevertheless, like, it is a very weird shape for a hut to look in. Because now you know Jabba was lacking. Like
all of them. Like literally all of them.
I'm just saying Jabba looked like just a pile of goo compared to these other ones. I mean, the ones in this one weren't too bad. But slimmer. Rata literally was like, he was on that, you know, what is that, Tybo?
Yeah, he did.
Billy Blaine, you know, getting them workouts in, you know, working that core. And you know what? It really did help that Jeremy. Why are you shaking your head?
Oh, well, because so I went looking. So the first time that I saw Rata, I had watched the Clone Wars and he's a baby. So in the film, they show a picture of baby him and I'm like, yeah, he's dumb, because Ahsoka ends up picking him up as a Padawan and she calls him Stinky. Like, it's great. It's
No. He ends up getting kidnapped.
I know, but she nicknames him Stinky.
Yes, but they are sent on a mission to go and find him because he was kidnapped. So yep. they have to go
he
and...
He keeps getting kidnapped. That's his problem. So when I was like...
Well, okay, I guess that makes sense for this movie then.
Yeah, right? So then I went looking for like a muscular hut and I came across the USA Today article and I was like, oh, and it said, oh, he's not what you think. I was scrolling down. It's literally just somebody complaining because he's like... He broke off from wanting to be under Jabba the Hutt's like example and didn't want to be a bad guy. And they're like, let a bad guy be a bad guy. Like, why does he have to? I was like, oh my gosh, you're one of these people? Like, no. And they even put in there like, let him have, you know, bikini clad slaves with chains. And I was like, I got to figure out who this person is because okay. I'm going to make a complaint.
Here it is. So Leia Organa Solo duels Baldorian the Splendid in 13 ABY.
The Splendid?
Yeah, this is what he looks like.
Oh, he kind of does look like that.
Interesting.
Oh, so, my Lanta.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations, Jeremy Allen White. You are now a very muscular
As described
hut.
In the novel Star Wars Planet of Twilight. The artwork was done per request by someone else, but the story talks about it. So, but yeah, Jeremy Allen White. Great work. Totally unrecognizable in the performance he did, but he did a great job. Yeah, I mean, if Jeremy Allen White's going to be moving towards like voice acting, it'd be interesting to see how that progresses into other roles, and if he's flexible in that way as far as his voice,
that was cool.
It'd be pretty unique to see if he kind of follows the same pathway as like Robert Pattinson and see what happens there. So
agreed.
I think the next person, obviously, the next person we need to recognize is the illustrious and always wonderful Sigourney Weaver.
Yay! Mm.
You know, the fact that we got. Ripley in the Star Wars universe. So now she's got a hand in the Aliens franchise and now she's in the Star Wars franchise. She's in all over the universe right now at this point. But to see her in it and to see her flying a X-Wing.
I was not expecting that.
I was not expecting that either.
I'm like, the cutest. She was just like,
you know, as soon as they said cut on that scene, she ran and took that jumpsuit and helmet and hit it. And
it's
right there next to like the Xenomorph head she probably has in her house. Let's be honest.
You know, I'm not one for people who use the line, do you know who I am? But I am for her for stealing like
without a
stuff.
Doubt.
Yeah.
If anybody has earned their stripes on fighting aliens or fighting ghosts, like it's Sigourney Weaver. Mm-hmm. Like Sigourney Weaver has done it. She was in Ghostbusters. I don't know if you recall.
No. Well, I don't recall
you're looking like.
No, my brain also was thinking about the Finding Nemo 2 movie when she was the voice.
She was just
the
voice for the. No.
She was very soothing.
How does that. Yeah, she fights fish, Spencer.
And
that's what's happening. She's like, she
aliens.
Fights ghosts, she fights aliens, and she fights those dang fish. Like, that's a menace
fish.
That we're all worrying about today.
She was also, you know, surrogate mother in Aliens. So, keep going. Keep going. We love Sigourney Weaver.
Okay. But really, great performance. It was fun to see her in it. The only other person real quick to mention that was briefly in it was Martin Scorsese, the illustrious director who lent his vocal talents, which I believe the last time we saw him lend his vocal talents was Shark Tale. And
he was Marty, the pufferfish.
Yes, and it was great. And I don't know if he's done any other vocal work since then. If he has, I don't know. Not as important as, you know, Marty the pufferfish. Just saying, but you know, him, you know, being the boss of Will Smith. It worked out. And then in this particular case, it was fun to see him in it. But I do have to state the biggest and best portrayal of a character in this movie, in this franchise thus far, has got to be the voice of Zeb, voiced by the incredible, illustrious, just overall great talent of Steve Blum. The fact that you got Spike Spiegel showing up to voice the character in this major motion picture, you know, it's just so great. And he's
reprising his role. Let us get it clear and not get it twisted.
Yes.
He played the original in Star Wars Rebels.
He played Zeb in the actual series. So this, if you've seen that character pop up in the episodes prior to this, he is also voicing those moments too. So if you saw a Star Wars nerd get real excited to see a big purple, you know, monkey looking creature, it's because we know. We all know.
We've always known.
You're going to say something, Spence?
No.
You didn't get excited about Zeb?
Yeah, well, no. I got excited about Steve Blum because I heard the voice.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, Steve's in this movie. That's awesome.
It's Tom from Toonami.
Yes, it is. Which I had a quick, like, I don't know if it was just me and I was really excited, but when there was a couple of moments with Zeb through the, when he's piloting, I could have sworn I heard overtones of Cowboy Bebop. And there was some, there was some jazz and I was like... I'm going to need to listen to this.
No,
really hard
I,
now.
No,
I don't think there was.
That was just in your head. So it was literally just in your head. You were hoping.
It's whenever you hear his voice, you just start playing jazz.
I mean, and be honest. Let's be honest. Spike didn't really do a lot of the flying. It was Tank. I mean, let's be honest. So if you were thinking that, you were wrong. So anyway, the fact is that Steve Blum reprising his role as Zeb, seeing Zeb in a live action movie. Just tickles my fancy in all the right ways for the fact that I love the Rebels series and Zeb is such a big part of that. And to see him make that kind of, you know, step up to not only the Mandalorian series, but also in film, really made me happy. Mm-hmm. So, kind of transitioning over to the story itself. What?
I wanted to bring up my favorite person.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I wanted to shout out Shirley Henderson.
Oh, that's right. The person you emulate the most throughout the whole week.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I just love, you know.
Go ahead.
I'm not going to say that, baby. They're called Azellians, which are the.
Amy likes to, throughout the middle of the day, she goes, bad baby.
No.
Amy does it all the time.
No.
And
I
it's
don't.
Funny that she's getting
usually,
shy about it now.
No, because what I
we
try to do.
We should call
is
intern Sarah and ask her if intern manager, managing intern Amy says it at work. all the time.
I don't.
Which she does.
You so, don't work with me.
No, but I live with you and I know you do it all the time there.
I do not.
Yes, you do.
No,
you
know, it's, I try it's to okay. do the Watto voice.
Yeah, just, yeah. No, you do this yeah, voice.
No, no, I ask all the for time. Imperial credits only.
And then she does the bad baby.
No, I don't. It's no
That's
squeezy.
A bad baby.
Also, because the fact
Mando
is...
Mando in there, we'll be back.
Yes.
That's a big pipe.
I think that was one of the... She did, again, all of them.
Why don't you remind people who where she's known from?
Shirley Henderson, most admirably noted, is Moaning Myrtle from the Harry Potter series. Mm-hmm. But prior to that, she was one of the friends in Bridget Jones's Diary.
Yeah, nobody cares about that one. But she is Moaning Myrtle. No, Moaning Myrtle from the Harry Potter franchise is much more relatable.
But yeah, apparently this is, she has three new...
Because that's like Bob me Lufric. Saying she's the wife of that one guy in the movie Filth. Not everybody's seen that movie, but I know her mostly from that before I saw her in the Harry Potter franchise.
See, there you go. But so these are three different... Anzellians, and their names are...
There's four.
I know, but she did all of them. There's no Babu Frick on this. Sorry, guys. Klang, Ba, and Kido are three of them. I don't know what the fourth one was.
If you don't know, the characters that Amy is mentioning is from the people that Babu Frick is from. So,
yes, they're of the
since
same.
Since she's not really explaining Smiths. All that well.
So. I said there wasn't Babu Frick, but they're mm-hmm. Babu Fricks. Ugh, whatever. Frickin' Babu. Okay, you want to talk about the story now?
Are you done?
Are you?
You're the one who's still talking.
I was excited, and now you're just calling me okay. out on things.
So Spencer's just shaking his head like, So, talking about the story, as I mentioned, this story does kind of feel like it's an extended episode. And we'll kind of lay it out, and you kind of draw your own conclusions. But essentially, the whole film is based on the Mandalorian is given a job. He has to go and meet with the Hutts to figure out where... their nephew is so that he can go rescue him to get information. He goes to the Hutts. They send him to somewhere where he's a gladiator for someone else. He goes, finds him, but he doesn't want to leave because he's about to win his freedom. And the person that pretty much has his contract is about to give him his last match. And if he wins, he gets to be free. Things ensue. Chaos happens. Tables are turned. And ultimately, the Mandalorian and Grogu find themselves at the raw end of a deal that is pretty much targeting them to kill them because they double crossed whomever. Chaos ensues, people go crazy, and big battle scenes mm-hmm. ultimately. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much, without giving away the ending, that's kind of how it follows through.
Yeah.
And if you've seen an episode of The Mandalorian, or if you've seen an episode of The Clone Wars or an episode of the Rebels series, it ends kind of similar to most of those episodes, like the ones that have like a full resolution on them. That's typically how that's how those end. This is how the movie ends. So if you've seen those, there's not really much of a surprise there.
Well, and also for season three, it kind of ended with like he had done his, Mando had finished and he and Grogu were just going to go off and do whatever. But it wasn't like, oh, they're coming back and we're having another season and you're going to know. And we're just like, okay, cool. They exist in the universe. Like, yeah, I was okay with that.
Yeah, there wasn't really much leading to
this.
Yeah. Like, this was just a very, like, standalone. It honestly, and I know that there's many reports where Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau have, like, vehemently denied that this is not just an amalgamation of two episodes into a movie. But it really does feel like that. Like, I'm sorry, guys, but like, it really does feel like it. Like, there's nothing in this movie that really stands apart for me that says I needed to pay theater money to go see this in the theaters.
Which I think is a great thing to note, that it's good and bad, because the quality that when we're at home and we're watching for Mandalorian has been that good.
True. I do agree. It lets us know that, the quality and production value of the series is on par, at least, with what we're seeing in theaters. But then that does diminish the value of actually going to the theaters and seeing whatever they have, even if it's actually intended as a theatrical event type movie. Because in my mind, and I'm pretty sure it's the same with you, Spence, the more I am seeing that they're not really changing up the production value, the less of a reason that I have to go to the theaters to go see it. So the less I'm willing to pay to go see it at all.
I mean, we're already technically paying.
Well, I mean, the problem is that like these Mandalorian episodes cost a couple of million dollars per episode.
Yeah.
And so I understand why Disney's like, well, I'm not going to spend like $200 million for the whole thing. But like, you're kind of left in this weird spot where, like, you know, for like at least The Mandalorian, we're constantly all wondering, why are we here?
Yeah. And I think to your point, what you mentioned, like, you know, why spend $200 million to just create like a couple episodes or whatever episodes when they can do that to make a movie? I agree. But that movie has to go somewhere. Yeah. Like, the journey has to be worth the price. And if this is indicative of like, of the whole, like, the, going back to the logic of, you know, Marvel trailers lie, like, this is one of those things where it's like, I don't want to go to another one of these if this is what I'm going to expect. Just another like entry in the saga that doesn't really provide me with a theatrical event type moment.
Which is exactly what I was saying about if they had done this as a limited just for Star Wars week, they could have.
Oh yeah, without a doubt.
Arm and a leg. They would have made back all of their money like immediately.
Like, honestly,
they
if they marketed this as just kind of like going back to the Doctor Who thing, because they played both episodes back to back, like without any like end credits, it just seamless. If that's what they had done with this, I would have been fine with that. If this was the kickoff to the next season and this is like episodes 1 and 2 or 1, 2, and 3 or whatever, I would have been fine with that. Because then I would have known, okay, like, this is a special event that I get to have with people who love to watch the series. And, you know, this is what I'm watching. And then I can go back and see these episodes when they drop. This is a whole different thing. This is just, this is a movie that didn't really have a big climactic point. And I'm a little upset about it because I am coming to a movie to experience a movie.
Right.
Yep.
If you're telling me, if you're selling me on, this is a movie event and I'm coming to see it and all I'm getting is a series episode closer, like just a series episodes, then I'm being sold, you know, a bad bill of goods.
Right.
You know, and again, going into like the Doctor Who event, or even going to see, you know, like if they like for the Stranger Things thing that happened in theaters, or you know, even like for the what was it, the Kill Bill, the whole bloody affair.
Oh yeah.
Like, I knew it was two movies put together with an intermission. Cool, I got that. I know what I'm coming into. I'm not going to see something brand new. I'm going to see this event where it was originally intended to see that way. This is like, oh, you're going to see something great. You're not going to want to miss this. Come and see it, blah, blah, blah. And I go and see it, and I'm like, I feel like I didn't need to come to the theater to see it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's considered like false advertising or if it's just considered like bad promotion.
It's not really false advertising. I think the problem is just for us as fans, there's no reason to see it right now. Yeah. And I think like this is kind of like a problem with dealing with people's expectations.
Yeah.
Because like putting that whole pile of like what Doctor Who did versus what Disney is doing is that, like, you know, I think there really is something there for like, hey, you know, it's a fan event. If you want to come, you can, but you don't have to. But Disney being Disney probably was like, no, you have to come because we want your money.
And that's I think that's exactly what it was. Because then the drivers switch from it being kind of what we talked about earlier. The driver of it switches from it being a way to bring resolution to a story or a way to bring about a moment that actually impacts the overall universe that needed to be in a theatrical event versus, we just want your money.
It's
the Transformers movie versus
watching regular Transformers on TV. There was something that happened in the original, the 80s Transformers movie that was...
Are you talking about the 85 Transformers movie? But no, something happened in that movie.
The movie. Yeah, but that made sense as to why that was a movie and a movie experience and not just on the show. Would you agree to that?
So in 85, that was the first year the series had ever launched. So the series had just dropped that year. And so the movie was more of like a kind of ultimate buildup for that, because they didn't know how long it was going to go, which is why, I mean, if you've been living under a rock, I'm sorry, you know, just to whatever. But like Optimus,
the part where you just hold the sheep button and it just keeps bleeding while you're saying it, and you're like, if you don't know, Optimus
Prime dies in the first 15 minutes of the movie, and you get Rodimus Prime essentially as the new Prime, but like that's a momentous thing. And mind you, that didn't really last very long. Rodimus, they ended up reviving. Either way, the fact is like that was more like this may be the last. That's more like the Firefly thing. Like, you know, again, spoiler alert, but like with Firefly, like a lot of things happened in that movie that completely impacted the overall trajectory if they were to continue that series, in comic books, some of them did. In book form, they went back to the prequel information, and some of them, like there's even fanfic that totally ignores the movie. Yep. And then we also have an animated series coming up that's going to... I don't even know where it's going to pick up from.
We don't know because we haven't really had all of that conversations, but the team is on board.
Yeah. But I think the biggest thing for this is like, this is Disney. Disney knows, or at least they should know, because they employ a large amount of people who manage this part of their industry, but they should know how to market something appropriately and accordingly, especially if it means so much to the fandom. Like if this was the Mickey Mouse Clubhouse or whatever, and they decided to make a movie like the Paw Patrol movies. Let's take the Paw Patrol movies. The Paw Patrol movies.
We're not Paw Patrol people, but we're using it as an example, guys.
We're not Paw Patrol people, but this is also not in disrespect to anyone who might be. But like the movies ultimately seem like just very inflated versions of the episodes, and mind you, that might be what your kids want. They might want to go to the movies and get a box of popcorn and watch it, and they might engage with it. And that's great. Like, if that's a family event they're going to do, cool. More power to them.
Can we use a better example? The Rugrats movies.
I mean, the Rugrats movies, though, were events. I personally feel like. But, like, I'm talking about, like...
We, like, showed up for those guys.
I'm talking about, like, the others. Like for instance, the SpongeBob movies. Like, I think at this point...
that first one...
No, the first one was more built for theatrical, you know, events. The rest of them... are really just straight. I mean, that's why they just put them directly on streaming services now. But those are like not really great in theater moments to go to. And I feel like there's enough marketing research out there that Disney should have known. They should have at least had the wherewithal.
Okay, but here's the thing. I believe Disney definitely knew, but I just don't think they cared. And I think they really, I just see them as like a corporation that's just purely after the money, and they don't really care whether it makes sense or if people are like, if people are super upset, then they'll be like, okay, yeah, whatever. But like, if they're only a little upset, then they're not going to really change their minds. That's at least what I'm getting off of what Disney is doing currently.
What do you think, James?
Yeah, really, when it comes down to it, it is just, it's really frustrating because there should be like care and consideration, and they looked at Grogu, and instead of creating, like, I hate to say it, they could have not only marketed this better, but created demand with limiting supply on purpose. And then in their magnanimous, like, there's a way, and I hate to say this, there's a way to utilize the hype to build and create it sounds really dumb, but to utilize the fandom in a way to generate income and keep your product and the property in the public eye. And this is just like, they're in the hole, like they're bad in the hole, and they're like, oh, everybody's gonna want to see this, and I'm like, no, they're not. They're going to literally wait, and in not releasing this as something special or creating that type of hype to like to even honor Favreau and Filoni and the rest of the Star Wars universe, it's like, okay, you tried, but this is unfair to everybody that really worked on the series. And then they're like, oh, by the way, it's in the theater and you can go see it in the theater. And it was like, yay, but we're not making any money on this. And they're like, yeah. you're not.
So. And plus, you know, we are currently in an economic issue.
Yes.
And people are just not going to spend the money to go see something if it doesn't feel like it's a must-see thing. Because at the end of the day, you're right. You can just wait to see it on Disney Plus in like a few months. So what the heck is the point with this? You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
And I don't know. It's one of those types of talking points that you just, when you look at something like this, you really don't want to have these kinds of like thoughts and ideas regarding a franchise that feels like it's earned an opportunity for like something like this.
Mm-hmm.
It seems absolutely like to a point to where, you know, The Mandalorian and Grogu, the whole series itself does need a theatrical moment. We do need to have something momentous because it's built itself so much. And since the whole Star Wars franchise is based around that, like theatrical releases and they're kind of tent poles, it should absolutely like have something that caps off. If not caps off, acts as like the chapter change.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
But then we got this.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even understand why, like, there was many options they could have done.
Yeah.
Like, they could have just, like, as we said before, like, done a special or, like, something on Disney Plus, or even, like, something much smaller in scale, like, another episode, but, like, you know, it's a special edition episode that they could have also aired in theaters.
Yeah.
And it could just be a whole bunch of Grogu nonsense.
Which, literally, like, we have to talk about it. The more of the second half of this thing was literally Grogu, and it was in next. There was not really a lot of spoken.
I actually really liked that part.
It was nice.
Because I was like, why couldn't you do like, maybe not a whole movie, but like something like a special event that was like centered around Grogu and then like his ability to not talk. And then it's just kind of like a show and not tell him story, you know? Exactly. Because that would have been actually pretty fun. Because like there's lots of like funny moments with like dead silence as Grogu is trying to figure things out.
Mm-hmm.
And it works really well. So I'm not sure why that wasn't even an option for these guys either.
Yeah, it makes no... It really makes no sense why they decided to go at it like this. It's just so weird.
Yeah. And that's also probably why we've been hung up on like how weird this whole adventure has been.
Yeah. I 100% agree. Kind of moving forward with this, like as far as the movie goes, obviously we mentioned, you know, the budget for this, for the production value was up there. So, you know, you do have a lot of great scenes. You do have a lot of action packed moments. Amy mentioned the Phil Tippett stop motion scene that was actually really well done and very recognizable as far as like that iconic work and the callbacks. One of the things I did want to ask you guys, like, as far as like, where do you guys feel as far as highlights or issues go, where are you guys like at? As far as, do you guys have any? Is there anything that you guys wanted to highlight? Anything that stuck out for you as an issue other than what we've mentioned thus far?
I just want to go back to the same point of Grogu. He was like a real highlight. I mean, Grogu's kind of always a highlight because they know how to use this baby very well. Like for merch or for like limited, like just comedic effect, he always seems to be like one of the strong points of like the whole series along with The Mandalorian. So he by himself is a highlight.
Yeah.
Yes, 100%. 100%. Like, I really, this really feels like at one point it's the Grogu show.
Yeah.
It's the Grogu show. And it's not like to his detriment. It's just he has created such a legitimate, like, he himself has a fandom. Like, yes, he's part of the Star Wars universe, but it's like everybody's like, oh, he's Baby Yoda. We're like, no, his name's Grogu. They're like, no, Baby Yoda. He Baby Yoda. Like, there was people eyeing and guffawing, and like, it was just everything he did was so fantastic and wonderful. And I'm like, oh, my Lanta, it's happening. And I have nothing bad to say about people that are working this puppet because they are working that puppet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is why I feel like this movie had a little bit more mix between CG Grogu as well as like more CG than practical effect work with the puppet. Although there were instances where you knew there was a puppet because it was definitely interacting with its surroundings.
Right.
So
Yeah. If we're talking to me about highlights, I mean, so this is going to be funny. I really liked the score. Ludwig Göransson, who did Sinners, but he also has done the score for The Mandalorian as a whole, reworked that Mandalorian theme all over the place.
Yeah.
He did it a couple times.
With that Toy Story version at the end of the movie? I was like, this is
great. And he also reworked it for the moon planet as well. Like, that was also a reworked version of the original soundtrack too, or the original theme. But yeah, that was super interesting. And again, that Toy Story version was like, all right.
He was just having a moment. He was like, how many different genres can I do?
I mean, as long as Randy Newman wasn't going to show up, like, you've got a friend in me. So,
I really liked the score. I liked that it was different iterations. It had the original one in there. It felt like I could kind of listen to it, and there were different vibes that were happening, and the score was well met and well matched.
Yeah. As far as myself, like, as highlights, I do have to appreciate the practical effect work of the puppets with the smaller, what were they called again?
They are called Enzel.
I almost said Ethiopians, but that's not right.
A-N-Z-E-L-L-A-N. Enzelin.
The Babu Freaks.
Enzelin seems right.
The Babu Fricks. Sorry, the Babu Fricks. Those scenes were absolutely hilarious to me. I loved those scenes. It was very reminiscent of a Jim Henson production.
They were all Muppets. It was so great.
But like, even in the area that they landed in, the swampland that they were in, it felt very much like Return of the Jedi or Empire Strikes Back, when Luke visits, you know, Dagobah and he ends up meeting Yoda. Like, it felt very much like that. So that was a big highlight. I think one thing that I do feel is becoming an issue, and it's not just because of this, it's not just in this movie, but it's also the culmination up to this point with the movie. I think we need to start giving more credit to where credit is due and recognize all the work that's going into that character of the Mandalorian. Because yes, Pedro Pascal, he's the face, but there are people who are, as we've mentioned previous, as Amy mentioned, there are other people who are making this character iconic in the way that it can be. And it's unfortunately just not all Pedro Pascal. As much as I know he would love to be that, and everyone else would love it too. He's the Edward James Olmos to Darth Vader. Like, he is just the voice. Pedro Pascal is just the voice. The bodybuilder that portrayed Darth Vader absolutely makes for the imposing nature of everything that you know of as Darth Vader. But unfortunately, the voice is what usually gets more credit for. And unfortunately, I don't recall can you look up to see what the name of the bodybuilder was?
And you're gonna bring that up.
Yeah,
you should have had that right.
Which I'm trying to remember the name, because we were just at Sparky's Retro Shop, and I believe he has
David Prowse.
David Prowse, yes, because he has one of those toys, the like little dolls of Darth Vader. It's a fairly large one, but it's actually signed by David Prowse. Oh. So that's actually really cool. Mm-hmm. And I think we're getting to that point with The Mandalorian, in recognizing like all the different elements that are making The Mandalorian still so unique need to be kind of included when you talk about this character.
Well, what's interesting is like when we did one of those switches from Pedro, from the other guy whose name I forgot already.
Brandon Wayne?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Latif what?
I knew his name was Latif. Latif, I'm off that page.
Latif Crowder.
It was while he was talking, because they had to remove his helmet. And I just, like, once I became like very hyper aware of like the two different actors, I was like, I need to learn this person's name. And I'm still working on it.
Yeah, no, me too. Like 100%. Obviously, like, it's been over 40 years since the first Star Wars movies come out, and I'm still needing to remind myself that there was two people who portrayed Darth Vader, and they both deserve credit.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I think that's the culminating thing of like, whenever people talk about the Mandalorian series, they always mention, oh, Pedro Pascal does this. He's great. He's this. And I'm like, that's fine and all, but he's not the only person who portrays the character.
Right.
And I've been, you know, guilty of doing this as well. So I'm just like, I'm thinking, you know, Disney needs to make a better effort, you know? So, but that does bring me to the roundtable question of the evening. And that is, so we are in opening weekend and it is the end of the opening weekend today. And we are looking at the numbers, and unfortunately, it is not a very solid weekend for this particular film for an opening holiday weekend.
Yep.
So if we're looking at opening weekends, you're looking at so far, it's about to hit what looks to be 83 million.
Not enough.
No, it's supposed to be. It was projected to be 103 million. Past. Let's see. Oh, that's worldwide. It was projected to have about 103 million after Memorial Day.
Hmm.
Now, that's just domestic. That is actually on par to be the lowest opening weekend for a Star Wars film. Only by a hair, though, because Solo, A Star Wars Story, actually opened with a similar amount, which is probably, actually, I think, this one's is projected at 102 to close out with 102 million. Solo closed out with 103 million. Oof. So, and we all know how.
Yeah, Solo it was bad. It was super bad.
So after the film's soft opening, do you think, and this is a question to you guys, do you think audiences are becoming more selective about what deserves a theatrical trip, especially when a story is already feels built for streaming?
Okay.
And this is kind of a culmination of all the conversation we've had thus far. I want to know your thoughts, because this is kind of what it's been building towards.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So yeah, people are being more, strategic in what they're going to go see. And I think what the Mandalorian's problem is, specifically because, like, you know, it's doing worse than Solo, which is, not great. I think the only reason why that's probably happening, it's two things. One, Disney Plus exists now.
Yes.
When Solo came out in 2018, there was no Disney Plus. And Solo is definitely a Disney Plus feeling movie. So I feel like we're kind of just seeing, like, you know, now that we have another option, that's kind of what people are doing. They're just like, I'll just wait for it to show up. Because, you know, if you don't have a whole bunch of people clamoring to go into, like, the theaters, see it,
yeah,
you know, you can just wait it out, really.
Yeah.
I think another thing is just, like, you know, the story just feels kind of more of the same. Like we've been saying this whole episode, like, yeah, there's nothing that really, like, puts it out there as, like, you need to be in there day one, you know? Yeah. So I feel like those are the real two things that are messing with this movie.
Yeah, and I think it's also kind of the culmination of, like, what certain reviews are coming out and saying about the movie, and people are recognizing, like, oh, well, if this isn't really something unique, then I don't need to rush, kind of like you said, I don't need to rush to the theaters to see it, which is probably a part of the impact on the overall opening weekend, you know. But what about you, Ames? What do you think?
Movie tickets are super expensive. Let's just be honest. I was looking at two regular adult tickets, and it was $30 for matinee. It was over $30 for matinee if I wanted to buy it online. I have no doubt that people are being more particular about what they're going to go to the theater for, because everything just keeps going up and up and up.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds really dumb, but even $15 for me to go see a movie, and I am already paying the $30 to see it or the other things on TV. Why?
Yeah.
Like, I can pop popcorn at home. And it's kind of heartbreaking, because the community that movie theaters are and the experience is something that we used to have access to all the time. The dollar theater was great.
Mm-hmm.
And I never felt like I was missing out on things.
That was, man, I remember those days. I mean, mind you, it was after the fact when the movie was already in theaters, and then it makes its way to the $1.50 movies.
But still, you were able to see it. Like, and the fact is that when there are when there are things that are being put out that we have access to already on TV that we're already paying for, why are we going to pay again? Really? Because yeah. I think part of that is they're like, well, it's going to come out on streaming now, so it's not worth it going there. It's just, it's studios shooting themselves in the foot with non-original, like, movies or whatever. And it's just, it's frustrating.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think it's one of those types of conversations and having that it's like, you're looking at a situation where a dedicated fandom, and it is dedicated. If you look at the Star Wars fandom as a whole, people are religiously, you know, fans of, like, they're fanatics. I mean, that's where the term fan comes from, but they're religiously bonded with this franchise to the point to where, like, there's conventions that people go to that are just dedicated to Star Wars. People live their entire life cosplaying as a certain character or as a certain member of the Star Wars, you know, universe, and they make their whole persona around that. Like, people are beyond fanatics with this fandom. And so with that, it's like you have to be very mindful of what you serve that community, because it can instantly become divisive in a heartbeat. Take, for instance, the sequel trilogy. The sequel trilogy, if ever there was a test for the Star Wars fandom, it was the sequel trilogy. That mm-hmm. divided people right down the center, and there were wars over this and raging conversations.
The Star Wars.
Yeah, the Star Wars wars, like, quite literally. And it created this conversation within people as to, like, what actually needs to happen within the Star Wars fandom to help keep people in, you know, invested in what's going on with the new while still honoring those things of the past. And that's the balance, right? And so when you're talking about movie releases, you're talking about, like, those people who went to, like, midnight movie releases. They went to the opening, you know, opening days of, like, certain movies that they were in line all night to wait for, and they got their tickets, and they got to see this movie at midnight, or they got to see opening day of this movie or whatever. You're talking theatrical events. You need to recognize that people hold those types of events in high regard, and you're doing this type of streaming opportunity. You're doing this type of streaming content in a theatrical open. How do you think the fandom's going to react to that? Are you gaining trust? Are you losing trust? Once you get to those kinds of questions, then it starts asking, you have to start asking yourself, like, what's the point? And I really feel like this isn't so much of just a conversation about dollars anymore when it comes to things like this. It shouldn't be. It's, do you respect the fandom or do you not?
I don't think they do is the problem.
Well, and that's
same as cash people. You're like, oh, we slap Star Wars on it and you're going to come for this. And we're like, I don't think I will.
Yeah. It's unfortunate because of the fact that the Star Wars franchise is a huge, huge fandom. Like, there is a huge fandom. And its implications, you know, as far as, like, good movies, good whatever, like, they will jump on a bandwagon and completely, like, oust. Like, when was the last time you heard someone talk about the Solo movie outside of what we just did tonight?
No one ever talks about that.
That's because the fandom knows and they're like, that goes and lives on whatever island Napoleon Bonaparte died on. Like, it is out there. It is ostracized. It is outcast. It is not here because they did wrong. And they tried to serve it to the fans, and the fans tore it to pieces.
Yep.
So I feel like this needs to be a learning opportunity for Disney, because in all honesty, if the opening weekend isn't indicative enough that this was not a success, let it be heard across the platforms and the social media and whatever anyone has an opportunity to speak out. Let that be enough to say, hey, don't serve us this. This is not what we want to see. We're giving you our money. We're willing to invest in what you are building out. But if you're going to give us stuff that we're already paying for with our subscription services, I am less inclined to see the next one, no matter what you say is in it that should draw me in. So Wrapping this thing up, let's go ahead and go around the table and talk about whether the film passes or fails and how many monocles. Let's start with Amy.
So this film has a beginning, middle, and an end, even though it's episodic in nature on technicality. So it passes. really, when it comes down to it, this feels like they could have done so much more to treat the fans to the surprise. And that is not in saying that Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni and the whole slew of men, women, children, everybody, like everybody, all humans that worked on this project really did a good job at making something that extended that story. However, it is not, because of the high quality that we have come to expect from Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni as live action leaders in the Star Wars universe on Disney Plus, this fell short of feeling truly theatrical. And it kind of breaks my heart in a way that is a little bit difficult to talk to or talk about. So with regards to this film, I'm torn, and I almost want to abstain from giving a monocle rating. Like, really.
Really.
And I'm not trying to be, I'm not trying to be cheeky, because giving it a rating feels like I am saying Disney is deserving of my monocles and people should go and watch this movie in the theater. And to be honest, if this is on streaming, catch it on streaming. Yeah. You're already paying for streaming. So I'm torn, because there's people that deserve the actual rating, but Disney itself, for the way that it decided to release this, so does not.
Yeah.
And that's where I am in line to rub. So I'm currently abstaining from my vote.
Okay, so here's the thing. I would like to also interject on why you can't do that. Because that's going to be happening a lot more going forward into the future. There's a lot of companies doing really stupid things. And even though the movies are good, the companies behind them are not. And then you've got to balance all of that. So,
but how? But then therein lies the question of, how do I give a rating that is respectful of not only the people, the time, the consideration that was put into it, and the corporation that decided this is what they wanted.
That
you
is,
can't.
That's, yeah, that's the thing.
Hence
that's
why I want to abstain until I figure this out.
No, you have to. That's part of your job. That's how you balance
I'm
it.
I'm an intern.
You have to. You have to figure out, as far as your professional experience and how you view and where you see the trajectory of it. Like, that's how you balance it.
This is just, this is
Do you
not
want
fair.
Us to give ours first and then you give yours?
Sure.
Okay, Spencer.
Sure. This does have a beginning, middle, and end.
Let a professional show you. No, I'm sorry.
This does have a beginning, middle, and end. It's not very well put together with all of the things we've been saying. There's good acting. It's a mediocre story. Ish, it's, and then Disney's doing all this nonsense at the back end that kind of just makes you feel bad at the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I'm going to put this down with a 2. This is not fully a review on the movie's quality in itself. This is also because of what Disney's doing and a whole bunch of things. But yeah, it's kind of just like, really, if you had any intention of seeing this movie, I would say wait for watching it on Disney Plus if you have access to that.
Agreed.
As far as myself,
how many monocles was that?
It's a 2.
Okay.
He gave it 2.
I just wanted to double. I was like, wait, okay.
So as far as myself, since Amy's abstained and she's going to give hers after ours. No, you don't get to make that face. You chose to do that.
I shrugged.
Yeah.
I'm allowed to shrug.
As far as myself, the movie does pass for me. It does have a beginning, middle, and end. It does complete the story for what it's offering fans in this 2-3 episode, you know, amalgamation, if you will. And honestly, I mean, let's call a spade a spade. That's what this is. It is just literally 3 episodes kind of squished together into one singular event. I don't really know what to say about this. I feel like there is so much more that should have been done in this particular film, especially for a theatrical event. And I feel like we are missing out on the better opportunities to watch real Star Wars stories being told on the big screen. And we are losing credibility within the audiences, whether if it's the older audience or the newer audience. The industry, the company itself is losing credibility, and we are beginning to see people taper off and no longer want to see what else is coming out. And because of that, they're missing out on all the great things that could potentially be from a great from great minds. Mm-hmm. Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau have done wonders to revitalize this franchise and incorporate things that really need to be seen and viewed in this story element. And I just feel like the powers that be are really making it difficult to continue doing that work without them, you know, having dollar signs in their eyes. So if it's any indication from this opening weekend's box office numbers, I can tell there are people who also believe that. And unfortunately, if this doesn't change, it will continue to do so for all things to come in the near future. I'm also going to give it a 2 out of 5. I really feel like this could have been a three episode drop for streaming. I don't know if anybody else is having that mentality, but I really hope that they change their mentality and thinking. Amy, where does that leave you with a Monocle rating?
Hilariously enough, I actually originally thought about it too. So I'm on par with you guys.
Yeah. And unfortunately, it's not that, you know, we don't like the franchise, because we love this franchise. Yeah. We are all Star Wars nerds. But the fact is, we see quality when quality is presented. And this, unfortunately, wasn't that. So...
And it's Disney's fault. It's Disney's fault.
Yeah, it's 100% Disney's fault. So, but that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out over at our website at filmlosopherspodcast.com. There we got allegedly over 300 episodes. Everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, thrills, and chills. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmlosopherspodcast.com. You can also check us out over on the socials page at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at filmlosophy101 and at bluesky at filmlosopherspodcast.social. Over at Instagram is where, oh, technically, over at Facebook, Instagram, Threads. Mostly Facebook, over on Meta. Facebook, Instagram, and Threads is where we also post all of our extra content, such as Spencer's Big Score and Amy's Jane on Scene, which can be found where?
The only place that's ever lived, which is at Jane on Scene on Instagram and Instagram only. And listen, originally, I guess I was going to do maybe a Streaming Is for Lovers segment today, but didn't happen. So I have things.
She has things, and she was only prepared for half of those things today.
I had 2 of them! Uh-huh. I was just checking my notes.
Good thing she didn't tell us that one was good and one was bad, or else we would already have a choice of.
But there was time travel.
Uh-huh.
it's just like, uh-oh.
You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, and it's iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, and iHeart, and Amazon Music. Tune in to your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Filmlosophers. Give us a like or a subscribe and listen in. Tell us what you think. Did you see The Mandalorian and Grogu? Did you like it? Did you not like it? What are your thoughts? Tell us your thoughts in the towel section, and we love to read those. We'll definitely check them out. And, of course, if you had a great time listening to this episode, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
We have.
Yes.
We highly suggest, if you are a fan of this series, definitely check it out at your leisure if you feel to do so. If not, you could always just rewatch last season and be prepared for the next one to come out hopefully soon, because as fans of this franchise, I would say you're not. Just come to your own conclusion. So, but that about wraps up another awesome episode. So from all of us here at The Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
And Manager Intern Manager Amy.
Class dismissed.